This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. After more than 3 months of a budget impasse and 16 days until a potential shutdown of state government, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. That light comes in the form of Monday's completion of a tobacco tax increase and the passage of the budget in the House of Delegates. Dave Mistich has more.
Lawmakers have been scrambling in recent weeks to fill a $270 million budget gap, caused in part by declining revenues from coal severance taxes and low natural gas prices. House members voted 84-15 to pass a budget bill yesterday that covers that hole. The bill calls for nearly $4.2 billion in total spending and draws $70 million from the Rainy Day Fund, according to House Finance Chair Eric Nelson. He spoke to the fiscal health of the state's Emergency Reserve Fund.
Our current balance is $812 million. $32 million was taken out last week because of the supplemental we passed to balance 16. You take this additional 70 out, we're projected to be at $710 million, 17% of our general revenue. That's in the top seven across the nation. We're down from the top four.
Delegate Tim Manchin was one of the no votes on the budget bill, arguing that to achieve true balance, there shouldn't be any money pulled from the rainy day fund.
This is not a balanced budget. Family balanced budgets are when your revenues equal what you're spending out, your expenses. This doesn't do that.
Last week, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin vetoed a version of the budget that drew $182.6 million from the rainy day fund. The current version of the budget was amended twice on the floor, before members moved to suspend constitutional rules and bring the bill onto third reading and up for a vote. One amendment from Delegate Sarah Blair reinstated $500,000 in cuts to Blue Ridge Community and Technical College. Another amendment from Delegate David Perry restored $2.5 million in cuts to the West Virginia Center for Professional Development. The center facilitates training for teachers and principals.
At a time when all studies and all education indicates that ongoing staff development should be an integral part of our educational system, we're looking at abolishing one agency which does this, which has done a credible job within the state and will continue to do a credible job within the state.
As a result of the amendments, the budget bill goes back to the Senate before heading to Governor Tomlin's desk, where he's expected to sign it. After the passage of the budget in the House, Senate Finance Chair Mike Hall indicated that the upper chamber is readying itself to send the bill to the governor.
I was kind of surprised that they added some additional spending. You know, we talked about cutting government for a long time and get down to the bitter end, and some things are added back in. So that's the way it is. As we consider some of the things, I think the Senate's going to concur in most of their amendments.
The budget's current form is largely a result of the passage of a 65-cent tax hike on cigarettes and other tobacco products, which is projected to bring in $95 million annually. That bill, Senate Bill 1012, passed the House 63-35. An amendment from Delegates Brent Boggs and Eric Nelson removed a section of the bill that would have prevented municipalities or counties from levying their own taxes or licenses on the sales of tobacco products. Delegates shot down other amendments to the bill, including one from Delegate Larry Faircloth that would have removed e-cigarette and vaping products. Another failed amendment by Delegate Isaac Spinagle would have dedicated the first $43 million in revenue from the tax to the Public Employees Insurance Agency. To make the budget deal more palatable for Democrats, Tomlin said in a Sunday news release he'll introduce legislation with $15 million extra for PEIA beneficiaries if the GOP-led legislature passed his tobacco tax increase. Tomlin says the proposal would reduce anticipated 2017 budget year premium increases from 12% to 6% and reduce possible 2018 increases. Senators concurred with the House's changes to the tobacco tax during a late afternoon floor session. It now goes to Governor Tomlin for his signature. Tomlin's PEIA measure is among other pieces of legislation that are expected to be introduced today. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich at the State House.
The Senate and the House hold floor sessions at 10 o'clock this morning. You can watch them on the West Virginia channel or online at wvpublic.org. While the House took up the budget yesterday, the Senate passed a bill that gives a little more than $2 million from state reserves to the Boone County Board of Education. Liz McCormick has more.
Senate Bill 1010 is a supplemental appropriation that would take money from general revenue and state reserves to help the Boone County school system get back on its feet after a decline in tax revenue this fiscal year. The decline was largely due to bankruptcies of three major coal companies in the county. In fact, the decline topped at an unexpected $9 million. To combat the loss in revenue, Boone County tried to ease the blow by cutting more than $2 million in expenses, closing three elementary schools, laying off 80 teachers and service personnel, and finding more than $6 million in savings. But it wasn't enough, so the county asked help from lawmakers. If nothing came from the legislature, teachers in Boone would not receive a paycheck on June 24th. Senate Bill 1010 was the answer, but many lawmakers who opposed it saw it as a bailout. During the Senate's afternoon floor session Monday, Senator Art Kirkendall, a Democrat from Logan County, spoke on the bill as senators were about to vote.
I know the concept of the bill, when it first became apparent to the legislative bodies, I heard the word used called bailout. And even if it was bailout, I would feel a little remorse about it. But I know when I become a senator here in November 2011, the first three or four pieces of major legislation that I supported was legislation for the cracker plant, TIF projects for Morgantown. The first four or five major pieces of legislation I voted on was to support the northern part of the state. We're all West Virginians. I never ever considered backing down on support of anything in the northern part, the eastern panhandle, or anywhere else. It's not a bailout. To me, it's a support system for saying thank you to a county. We're going to give you an opportunity to fix this.
Senate Bill 1010 ultimately passed 32-0. Boone County would have to pay the money back over time, but for now, teachers in the county are more likely to see their paychecks. The bill now goes to the House for consideration. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick at the Capitol.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:51. Partly sunny skies today, temperatures in the 80s, a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the 60s, a chance of rain and thunderstorms on Wednesday night, and into Thursday. Daytime highs in the 80s, overnight lows in the 60s.
Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com.
$22,000, that's the number of retired coal miners and dependents who could lose health benefits by the end of 2016. Legislation has been introduced in Congress that would save those benefits, but as yet to be taken to a vote. So today, thousands of active and retired coal miners from seven states are expected in Lexington, Kentucky for United Mine Workers of America rally. Carol Lofton reports that the fundamental issue is that as coal companies file for bankruptcy, the first thing they seek to shed are worker benefits.
Jennings Harrison worked in a coal mine for 36 years, over which time he accumulated back problems, neck problems, carpal tunnel in his wrist, and precancerous nodules on his lungs.
If we didn't have the health care, we'd be hurting.
By this time next year, not having health care could be a reality for him, though. That's because Harrison worked for Peabody Energy, then Patriot Coal. Both companies filed for bankruptcy in the last 4 years. A little background. In 2007, Peabody created Patriot Coal. Peabody assigned Patriot 13% of its coal reserves and 40% of its health care liabilities. In a nutshell,
Peabody was attempting to shed an enormous amount of its existing liabilities by creating Patriot.
That's West Virginia University law professor Patrick McGinley in a Skype interview. McGinley is co-editor of a treatise on coal law and regulation.
Whether or not Patriot would survive or not was a question, but there's a fairly good argument that That's what Peabody was attempting to do at that time.
As part of a union contract, miners who put in 20 or more years were promised lifelong health benefits. But when Patriot filed for bankruptcy in 2012, then again in 2015, a judge granted Patriot's request to shed retiree benefits. The United Mine Workers of America stepped in and negotiated $400 million from Patriot and Peabody. The companies came up about $100 million short. Those Band-Aid funds will run out by the end of this calendar year. Without health care benefits, Harrison said he could be forced to declare bankruptcy himself.
I mean, after working all your life in the mines and I was promised, you know, health care and stuff and pension and stuff, it'd be a shame to lose that, you know, when you really need it.
Harrison is just one of almost 22,000 retirees and their dependents from seven states who are slotted to lose their benefits by the end of the year.
They're going to have to make some very, very difficult and frightening choices.
That's Phil Smith, Director of Communications and Governmental Affairs for the United Mine Workers of America.
Are they going to be able to buy the drugs that they need or pay the rent? Are they going to be able to get the health care that they need, go see the doctor, or buy food?
In 1946, the United States government and the UMWA signed an agreement that guaranteed miners with 20 or more years on the job benefits for life. Smith said this is the only such agreement that has ever been signed between the U.S. government and a union. The miners are rallying today to ask the government to honor that promise.
What is required at this point is legislation that we are looking at in Congress that would preserve these health care benefits for those people who have lost or will lose them as a result of the bankruptcies.
In December of 2015, a bipartisan bill aimed at protecting miners' health care and pensions cleared both chambers of Congress. That legislation was blocked by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. It is not completely clear why McConnell opposes the bill, although it is well known that McConnell has repeatedly clashed with the UMWA. An emailed statement from a McConnell spokeswoman said that he, quote, has been and remains committed to helping ensure the retirement security of our nation's retirees, including coal miners.
If Congress does not act, if Congress fails to act to do its job to keep the promise that the United States government made to these retirees 70 years ago, then the money will run out and those folks will be without their health care because there is no other money to take care of it.
Five major coal producers in the United States have sought bankruptcy protection in the last 5 years. Each time they sought to shed employee benefits. McGinley again.
Members of Congress, politicians, it's their responsibility to fix laws when they're misused in the sort of way that many believe have occurred, not only with regard to Peabody and Patriot and other corporate entities as well in the coal industry and other forms of business. Congress really has to take a look at bankruptcy laws and fix it.
Peabody did not respond to a request for comment, and the PR company who worked for Patriot declined comment. No other Patriot spokesperson could be found. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from the Benedum Foundation. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.
Hi, this is Scott Finn, Executive Director at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. If you watched the budget showdown at the legislature, you know why your donation to West Virginia Public Broadcasting is more important than ever. Take part in our Countdown to June 30th campaign and keep West Virginia's storyteller healthy and strong. Call 1-800-456-3488 or pledge at wvpublic.org. And thanks.